Welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. Gaining a strategic advantage in business often comes from turning raw data into actionable insights. 20 years ago, when Jan Kessel founded Enveronix Analytics, she wanted to increase the value of data by organizing it around geographic analysis. The difference made her business hugely successful. Our sister podcast in Canada talked to Jan about the simplest and most sophisticated way to increase the value of data.
The reality is that all kinds of data can help inform different decisions. And part of our job is to help organizations understand what's fit for purpose and also fit for budget. You don't need a Cadillac to drive across the road.
Jan Kessel tells Esri Canada's Guan Yu how a geographic approach to data gives organizations the competitive edge.
You started Enveronix Analytics, EA, over 20 years ago when big data and analytics weren't typically front page news. Tell me, what's the opportunity you saw back then?
Interestingly enough, when I started Enveronix Analytics, I'd already been working with data and statistics for almost three decades, because I believe that data and information really are crucial to decision-making and good business decision-making. So when we founded Enveronix Analytics, we had been already working with data and statistics, census data, the early days of geodemography. And originally, we had census data for looking at small areas, and that was pretty much it. Starting around the late 90s and the early 2000s, organizations like businesses and governments and not-for-profits had a lot of information about the people that they were engaged with. And they had it in CRM systems or sales systems where they actually knew who the individuals were and what they purchased. What we saw when we founded Enveronix Analytics was an opportunity to continue to bring different kinds of data together to help organizations get one view of their constituents or their customers and find more ways to reach them. We were just really anxious to take it to the next step.
What I'm hearing is bringing a lot of these disparate data sources together and to weave it into a common context so that businesses can be more data-driven. They will have the capability to be able to understand better of their own data in this context provided by all of these different data sources.
It's really important not to talk about which kind of data is better. What's important is to use the right data for the right purpose with something that you can actually get learning out of and activate against and make a difference. And so it's not a question of, is postal code data better or worse than my actual first party data about what my clients do, or is geodemography better than surveys? The reality is that all kinds of data can help inform different decisions. And part of our job is to help organizations understand what's fit for purpose and also fit for budget. You don't need a Cadillac to drive across the road.
So I wanted to talk a bit about your flagship product, also the first product you launched called Prism. There are two aspects of the Prism product that I picked up. One is all of these variables that you modeled into this product. It's about people's behavior. It's about their shopping tendencies. It's about their education. A lot of attributes that are integrated into the product. The other side of it is about the wear, right? You have these 67 segments, and basically you're taking the whole country of Canada and say, for this particular segment, where are these groups in Canada? So tell me a bit about the relationship between geography and data, because now big data is on the news every day. Yet when we are talking about data, very few people will think about geography. But you said geography is the secret sauce of EA, Enveronix Analytics. So I wonder if you can help us unpack the relationship a little bit more here.
Prism is a classification of six-digit postal codes. So it's inherently geographic. But the geography is important whether, as a marketer or an analyst, geography is part of your paradigm. So let me give you an example. Consumer packaged goods manufacturers. They have some because of loyalty programs and others, but for the most part, they don't have a lot of detailed information about who's buying their products. The grocers have that information, but they want to link together the distribution of their products at the store level with what kind of advertising campaigns that they spend on TV and in bus shelters, knowing the geographic location of where the information comes from allows us to link disparate data sources together. For example, there's a very large amount of very rich survey data in Canada. We have private sector surveys, we have surveys from Statistics Canada, and those sample surveys might be, even a good survey might be 5,000 people, it might be 20. There might be some great surveys that are based on 50,000 people. But if you're trying to take the behavior that you're measuring in a survey and figure out what happens for 750,000 postal codes, your sample size isn't big enough. But if we can make some assumptions using a tool like PRISM, that people generally behave according to their type, and we prove all the time that they do, and it's not to say that there isn't an exception, but people generally are like their neighborhood. When we combine that with survey data, we know the characteristics and the geographic area of the survey respondents, and traditional market research techniques to weight and normalize those data enable us to say, this is the response to a battery of survey questions, and then combine some other variable like how much money they spend in that neighborhood from other sources. Then you can create this triangulation of data and make an estimate of who in a trade area around a grocery store is more likely to buy cereal. And so for manufacturers, like car companies and manufacturers who may not be marketing one-to-one and thinking about where customers live, geography becomes the link that we use at Enveronix to leverage all of that behavior data.
What I'm hearing is geography and PRISM data in the geography form really enables marketers and organizations who provide services to interpret their survey, which may be very specific and limited in scope. They give them the tool to interpret it and find similar markets because the similarities of people's behavior. So it's really a tool to help them scale their insights and to be able to interpret what they found in their surveys.
So they can do that with their own surveys, but we also do it with the most important, most widely used syndicated surveys that are done in Canada. So we do the heavy lifting of that data projection for them. But you're right, we also, if organizations have surveys and the sample size is large enough, then we can make a projection for them about what happens locally.
Enveronix Analytics launched a popular product built from cell phone mobility data. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so we have a product called MobileScapes. We source location data tied to a timestamp from multiple vendors who provide us data that are permissioned, and they come in every morning, huge feeds of phone movement behavior. We've built models and tools through a lot of research. We've been working with this big phone movement data for more than 5 years ahead of the market. And when we produced MobileScapes, we knew that we had to combine sources. We knew we had to weight and normalize the raw data. And we also knew that we wanted to use the data as input to models to make sure that the outputs were highly reliable, but also highly compliant. We don't just want to be obeying the privacy laws. We want to be ahead of them to achieve that. It was a very heavy lift, but it's a very important thing because when we're using phone data, we have to make sure not only are the permissions there when the data come in, but we have to make sure that the processes provide accurate data because there's a lot of noise. And then finally, we have to make sure that when we do release patterns of people's shopping behavior or attending events or travel behavior, tourism behavior, all those things that we release in our MobileScapes and related products, we have to make sure that there's no possibility of re-identifying or breaking that trust that we have or that our data sources have with people who give them the data. One of the key things about MobileScapes is that we do a weekly update, and we can look at the patterns by day of week, by day part, And we can make that data much more current, which is very important for data-driven decision-making.
In your user conference, people present really interesting use cases of MobileScape data. One is about people's use of the parks. Which part of the parks are used more than others? And where are these people coming from? And the other one is about returning to work in downtown areas. Can you give us more examples of how MobileScape data are used by your communities?
People have a lot of information about who's coming into their locations, but not so much about who's going to their competitors. So these data allow a retailer to actually see the volumes and the patterns for both themselves on a day of the week or at a time of day. Another interesting one was looking at the patterns of where people went when they had to evacuate because of the forest fires, and helping the emergency response and the municipal organizations plan for getting people back into Kelowna after the forest fires. So there's a lot of public use as well. And then finally, we have a lot of organizations who look at that mobile movement data to think about operations like store hours, and even when can we open, when can we close, when should we offer deliveries, and those kinds of things, and staffing. If I'm seeing the patterns by time of day, then this becomes not just a marketer's tool, but becomes a store operator's tool as well.
That's very interesting. Another one that I'm really interested to learn more is the new to Canada. It's about new immigrants. Given that immigrants is such a big part of the population growth of Canada, and they fuel a large part of the economy, I wonder, what are you trying to do with this new product?
The immigrant community in Canada is the engine of our growth. And when we look at the large numbers, if we're bringing 700,000 or a million people every year into Canada, how do we ensure that they're settling in communities, that they're getting the services they need from a social service point of view, from an employment point of view, and also from a marketing point of view, that the products and services that are key to them when they arrive in Canada are available. So we have been taking data from IRCC that show quarterly, and in some cases monthly, the number of permits issued, the temporary work permits to students and temporary foreign workers, and the number of new permits issued to permanent residents. We all know some general patterns that we know the countries where of origins that people had typically come from. But immediately when we look at this more current data, we can see what used to be that India and China were very large and the rest were small. Now India is very large. And then there's a second tier of countries that are large sources. And then there are emerging sources of immigration like Nigeria, that if we don't look at this more current data, people aren't aware that there are some significant groups. And then these groups of newcomers tend to live in areas where their countrymen live, their friends or relatives. We can see both from the demographic data and this new to Canada data, we can see people going to different places. And some of that is because some provinces have put some employment incentives in place. And because for some temporary workers, there's some job opportunities. And then, of course, we know that where students come on temporary visas often come and stay. So looking at these patterns from the immigration data and running it through our statistical models is enabling us to produce quarterly view of where people are coming from and where they're settling.
People have certain local knowledge, right? They would know which immigration group tend to live where. But when you scale it to the whole country, and you're trying to move fast for this immigration wave and new people coming in, a tool such as New to Canada, it offers tremendous value to be able to look at everything at a national level.
The success of a lot of data and analytics right now is to have a national strategy, to have a product strategy. It does impact price. It does impact your promotion strategy. But having a data that can allow you to go from the big picture down to subgroups or down to different geographic levels and actually have that connectivity with the people that you're trying to reach at a hyper-local level. That's when we say the geography is the secret sauce, because you can put it in a framework and then you can bring it right down to where you can actually make a difference in your service delivery.
I want to ask you about your thoughts on big data. What kind of disruption does it bring to what you do?
It's disrupting, yes, but also creating amazing opportunities. So signal data, that's not coming from CRM or sales data. That's coming from connections to the cellular network or apps in phones. And so these data are extremely important, particularly because they help us get more information faster. For us, our core data, our Prism and our demo stats and a lot of our survey data are updated annually, and I'm completely satisfied with that. If you're a statistician or an economist, demographer, you understand which things change enough that you need to change them on a more frequent basis. But for a lot of shopping behavior, for things like emergency, for a lot of social service planning, we want stuff to be more frequent. And so it's a big part of our work is harnessing the big data. There was a debate at the beginning of the discussion about big data, which said, if the database is big enough, doesn't matter if it's not entirely representative, it'll all come out in the wash and we can just use the data. What we're finding is that the real exciting opportunities is the combination of the new big data in Canada, ultimately back to things like the census, because I say that official data makes big data usable. We can make sure that for community level and subpopulation level, we can make sure that we can have external control totals and we can normalize and weight the data so that it's high quality. And so for me, the development of all this data, not just the mobile phone data, but other data from the Internet of Things and looking at smart cities and all of those opportunities, it's continuing on this, my journey of going from census data to CRM to digital data, now to big data. It's great, so long as we are quite focused, I think, on privacy and ethics in terms of data and analytics and harnessing data. It's very important to remember that methodology is key. There's lots of good technology, but if you don't use best practices in terms of statistical processes, in terms of algorithms, you won't get good data. And people are spending a lot of money on programs and advertising and actual physical location based on data and analytics. So as much as I'm, of course, very excited and mindful of the new opportunities, I also think we need to have standards and we need to make sure that the data are being used properly from an ethics and compliance point of view, but especially from a statistical methodology point of view. So we like to make sure that the disruption in data and analytics from big data is accompanied by an adherence to best practices.
Thank you very much, Jen.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. And thanks to Jan Kessel for explaining how organizations can harness the power of geography for transformational growth. If you like this episode, please share it with a colleague.